I mean, first of all, thanks for choosing us over Lizzo.
This is all about to see what you can and can't do. And when you compete in our league, it'll tell you.
And welcome back to the 920 Podcast. I'm your host, Logan Quinton. Join alongside Bill Monnett. As always, we're here to talk about Tennessee and Kentucky coming up this weekend as the Vols keep on trekking on that 920-mile journey to Omaha. Bill, the bus has good vibes right now. The Vols are 31-6 overall. I can't believe we're going to get to 40 games this weekend. It's going by so fast, but good vibes all the way around the clubhouse and the fan base coming off a sweep of LSU. And all of a sudden, this is a top five matchup in some eyes and in some polls, definitely a top 10 matchup. But kind of you throw that out the window, and you at this point in the season, whether it's top five, top 10, two ranked SEC teams going at it in the same division, it's good on good. And I can't wait to see what they do this weekend.
No, it's going to be a great series. Before we go there, I wanted to go back to last week. You know, we all know LSU. This LSU team's not the College World Series champion LSU team, but they're still a dangerous baseball team coming in. A lot of talent on that LSU team. The pitching was better than I thought it would be. And, of course, I know you've got that – you get that bat at third base in Tommy Tanks. Other than Charlie Condon, I don't think there's a better hitter in college baseball than Tommy Tanks. And, you know, Tennessee did a good job. The pitching staff did a great job of controlling him until the last day. You know, he hit a ball over the party deck out there and got that one. But other than that, they did a good job of keeping Tommy Tanks controlled and not letting him be the guy to beat him. And, you know, like I said, LSU's pitching I thought was better. Holman was good. Their Friday night guy was good. So I was encouraged the way Tennessee went about winning that series and sweeping that series. They didn't have to hit 14 home runs to do it. They did it with pitching, timely defense, and then some timely home runs and hitting.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. That's why, looking back on the series, is what I think about is they did not, like you said, it wasn't a case where, I mean, you had only one game that went double digits. And I would have predicted the Vols would probably have to get to double digits themselves a couple of times in the series, but it was pretty tight for the most part. The last game ended up 8-4. That was a pretty comfortable one, but for the most part, you weren't boat racing the Tigers. Like you said, LSU's pitching was a little bit better than expected, probably. And the Vols pitching was certain. They answered some question marks. I mean, you had AJ Causey with a nice bounce back, not quite up to the standard maybe that we saw early on in SEC play, but certainly much better than the past two outings. You wonder how much went into play as far as him coming in a relief of Chris Stamos. I thought Stamos got that opener started really good. We had Aaron Combs. Looked fantastic, and that's what we've been waiting to see. Yeah, totally agree with you there. The way that they won, the fact that the Vols offense, as good as it's been, it wasn't like they were clicking on all cylinders and running away from an opponent and made it a home run derby. I like the way that they won, not just the fact that they went up for the sweep.
We've talked about the pitching. Somebody need to come in and step up and, you know, be that guy. We've talked about Aaron Combs, had him on earlier in the year on the podcast. And, you know, I made the comment on Twitter after his performance that it was great to see him come in and take charge, because this Tennessee team needs Aaron Combs pitching well if they're going to make a legit run to Omaha.
They do. They need him in a bad way. And it really felt like, Bill, that early on what we were seeing, some of his struggles, for one, they're trying to get a little bit of length out of him, and we didn't see that last year. He only logged 20 innings total last year. And for me, I think it was a little bit of the control cues, because that's what he relied on. He talked to us about chasing velo a little bit, and we know about the nasty spin. But the fact that he was able to kind of hone it in and, you know, looking back at his last few appearances, been really, really good. only given up two earned runs in the last nine and a third. That last outing on Sunday, that in that 8-4 victory, first time he hasn't surrendered a walk going more than two innings this season.
And that's the key for him. He needs to throw strikes. When he doesn't, that's when he gets and puts himself in a hole. But you know, he came out this weekend and three strikes, pitched ahead, and you know, we saw what he's capable of, and that's what we need to see going forward from Aaron Combs.
Yeah, and like I said, nice opener from Stamos. You know, like what he gave you there. I wonder if they go with the same remedy this weekend. And on off from Drew Beam to Nate Snead and everything else in between. Really good outing. You know, Nate Snead there, it was interesting Friday night. It started to get comfortable there really late, and you have Kirby Cannell come in, and next thing you know, the bases are loaded. And I'm watching Snead in the bullpen, and he's up and moving and just staying loose a little bit. The bases got loaded. He got loaded. he had to get hot, and then, you know, came in. You know, that's got to be a tough position. That's what I respect about Nate the most, is the fact that the position that he's in, number one, has to be so hard to manage for the coaching staff, but also for that player. First time in the SEC, and it's like, hey, man, you're going to have to be kind of a little bit of everything. You may end up starting. You may end up coming out for three appearances over the course of a weekend. You may get hot a couple of times over the weekend, not even come out at all. But nonetheless, you know, he's been able to manage that well. He looked great on Saturday and didn't even need him on Sunday.
But he was up in the bullpen late in the game just in case. He never was getting hot ready, but he was up stretching, getting loose just in case. So I think we would have seen him had the game gotten a little bit closer late.
Yeah, absolutely. But, things are looking good for the pitching staff. Starting to answer some question marks. We saw Marcus Phillips started his first start in that midweek game against Bellarmine. That's good news. The guy has all the physical tools, some of the craziest spin rates on the team. If he can cut his teeth here soon, that's going to be a huge factor going down this last stretch. But speaking of Combs, we'll go with Combs, and we'll also bring a bat in the mix. Blake Burke, got to mention him. 27-game hit streak. He's tied for the program record. I expect him to extend on that this weekend, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But Aaron Combs, Blake Burke, a bat and an arm. That's our Hot Works hot hand. Both of those guys deserve it. And, folks, if you want to go check out Hot Works, we've got four locations in the Knoxville area. 10839 Hardin Valley Road is where you can get the Fan Run family discount, $20 enrollment right now if you mention Fan Run Radio or myself. And the Fountain City location has a teacher special. All you teachers out there, I can attest to this, need to deload right now. Coming down this last stretch of the school season, Fountain City has a special for you. Go check them out at the Fountain City location. All of them offer military, college, medical discounts, and teacher discounts, but there's an extra special teacher discount. PM me if you want me to connect you with those fine folks over at Fountain City at LDQ Sports on X. Get at me and I'll get you over there. Any of the locations, really, if any of those work for you. But what's been working for Tennessee, it's a little bit of everything, and we're going with Aaron Combs and Blake Burke this week for our Hot Works Hot Hand performers. Bill, let's get to the Kentucky Wildcats. Did you have this on your bingo card? 31-5 overall at this mark, 14-1 in the conference.
Absolutely not. And anybody who says they did, they're lying to you. I can promise you that. But you know, this Kentucky team, you got to give credit where credit's due. You know, I've talked to several people and a couple of people, well, their schedule just hasn't been tough in the SEC yet so far. They're 14-1. I don't care who you're playing in the SEC. When you're 14-1, you're playing good baseball. And Kentucky is, they've just been, they've gotten it done. That's all you can say up to this point. 14-1 in the SEC, that says it all right now.
Yeah, and I mean, look at a team like Florida with all the all the buzz that they get with Jackie Cags and the program in general. I mean, getting swept by Missouri a couple weekends ago, you know, Kentucky's just taking care of business. And I have a lot of respect for Nick Mangione and what he's done to that program. I'm not sure there's a better fit, because that is a tough job in this sport. The way that they build their roster year to year and continue to have success, relatively speaking, is pretty impressive, because they're the antithesis of an LSU, of what Tennessee is now. And they continue to put out a really good product.
And that was my point going to be, Mangione's kind of taking the Vitello model, if you will. You look at the roster. He's got kids from California, from the Midwest, kids from Florida. Then he's got some of the better kids from the state of Kentucky. So he's gone where he needed to get the players to fill in that are the fit for that program and to fit the needs that Kentucky has. So he's just done a marvelous job. Lexington's an awesome city. I love Lexington. You know, I love going to Keeneland. I love the whole thing. UK, even though, you know, it's a big rival. We're not supposed to say nice things about our rival, but UK is a really good university and a really good town. So, you know, it's an easy place to, just like Knoxville, an easy place to attract young people to. You know, they want to go to school where it's, where there's a lot to do and in a nice environment. That's Lexington. That's Knoxville. Not any surprise that both of those programs right now have been able to attract kids from all over the country to come in and play baseball there.
And they're getting guys from a lot of different areas, like you said. I've got a list of four right here, but there is a long list of interesting transfers. They're willing to – I think they're in the market for those guys that – they're not going to get a Paul Skeens and a Chase Burns or a Billy Amick, but Nick Lopez is playing like an all-SEC performer for them. This is his fourth school. He was at Illinois Chicago Community College, then to Southern Cal for a couple of years. Now, UK as a grad. They have Cameron O'Brien, a pitcher that is a matchup righty for them. He was at Campbell. His previous stop. He's been a key player for them this year. Then you have Grant Smith and Ron Waldschmidt. Those guys were on the team last year, but Smith came from Incarnate Word. He's now a full-time player, hitting .297 through 91 at-bats. Waldschmidt, the outfielder, he was at Charleston Southern, joined Kentucky last year. He's already surpassed his home run total last year, which was 5. He's at 6 now. He's slashing .339, .500, .578, and by the way, 13 stolen bases. And that's just four names right there on a long list of transfers that they're getting, not from your LSUs or, you know, a Wake Forest or a, you know, you name it. Those names you see at the top of whether it's SEC or the NCAA in general. And he's making it work. I think it's an attraction, kind of like what you speak of, but also Mangione has proved that, you know, he can be competitive in this conference. The guy's been a part of hosting 3 regionals in his time at Kentucky, 2 where he's been the head man, but also back when he was on staff. There's just something that works with him. I'm not going to say he's immune to a big job, like a top 5 type of job in this sport. But man, Bill, the shoe really fits like a glove. It does. In this case.
And he's been able to get past the weather issue, if you will. You know, Kentucky being, I guess, the second northernmost school in the SEC, now second to Missouri. But you know, they have, the weather's not as great there. Just like in Knoxville, it's not great really until about right now is when it starts getting good. But he's been able to overcome that, number one. And the other thing that he's done, of course, Kentucky's one of the biggest ballparks in the SEC. And he's been really smart about building a team that fits that ballpark. That's not to say they don't hit home runs. They've hit some home runs this year, but they don't rely on the home run like a Tennessee does, okay, if you will. They steal a lot of bases, try to play good defense, and try to pitch well. He's built that team for that park there in Lexington.
It is. It's in Tony V's words, it's pitcher friendly. It is. It's a big park. And they bring in guys that on the pitching side of things that they may not be the quote unquote hard throwers, you know, but they've got a lot of pitchability, and they're going to let the defense play behind them and play to their advantage. They got some good ones. We can go right into it. The weekend rotation presented by Crumble Cookies. Nick Mangione, one thing, by the way, Coach Rozelle has done a fabulous job. He was at Eastern Carolina for a long time, has now been at Kentucky for a few years. And that really feels like what kind of up the ante, so to speak. Obviously, Mangione got off to a great start. First year was 2017, and that he came in with a splash. Those first couple of years, won over 70 games those first 2 years. And the 2017 was kind of history in the making, so to speak. But bringing over Rozelle, I think, really kind of geared them up to be sustainable, sustainable success. And they kind of – they're known for leveraging themselves pitching-wise for Saturday and Sunday, even though they may have a guy that might be a clear – quote unquote Friday night guy. For me, that would be Dominic Nyman this year, but they've been positioning here of late, Trey Pooser and then Nyman on like Saturday and then Mason Moore on Sunday. Nyman and Mason Moore by far the leaders of the bunch, but Pooser's gone in there and done a good job. He's a College of Charleston transfer. He did his last outing against Auburn, was his roughest in SEC. He only went three innings, gave up four earned runs, and he was out of there. None of these are high strikeout guys. Like I said, a lot of pitch to contact, pitch ability. For me, Nyman sticks out. He has a plus changeup. He can locate his fastball well, and it's got pretty decent ride. He can bump 92, but he's going to sit right around 90, 91. Then you got Mason Moore. He had a 180 ERA last season. He's backing that up with a good performance this season so far, 3.45 ERA. Lots of ground balls from Moore and the rest of the bunch. Like we said, they're going to try to play to their advantage with that park. I'm interested, Bill, in kind of how this Vols lineup does against this group. We've seen in the past Kentucky give Tennessee fits, particularly that 22 team.
Right.
But I really think this lineup is kind of built for what they're going to see this coming weekend.
Yeah, I do too. And just like we talked about, this past weekend, you know, they didn't have to hit a lot of home runs. Well, you know, and part of that was the way the wind was howling in from right field.
Yeah, good grief.
You weren't going to hit the ball to the right out to the right side unless you just really crushed it. So it was encouraging to see so many guys, you know, Blake Burke right off the top of it, you know, take the ball the other way, not try to pull it to realize, you know, what the wind was doing and use the whole field and hit the ball to the opposite field and really hit the ball hard that way. So that's what they're going to have to do this weekend. You know, they're not going to hit 14 home runs this weekend. I'd be shocked if we saw that. So they're going to have to use the field and hit the ball where it's pitched, go opposite field when they need to. So, you know, I'm not concerned at all from that standpoint. I think they'll adjust to the bigger stadium and go up there and have a good weekend.
And we've seen a little bit of sacrifice situations, a little station-to-station philosophy from Tony V and the boys, which is a lot different. We laid the bunt down on them last weekend.
Absolutely, which was just an absolute shock to me. We hadn't seen one, I don't think, all year till Ethan Payne's Sunday sacrifice. So, just proves when they need to do that, they can get that done as well.
And that's just crazy to me. Speaking of Payne, where you're already good 1 through 13, and then you got a guy like Ethan Payne that can come in at you know, late innings, and whether it's defensively or in that situation. Gosh, it's such a nice luxury to have. And I wonder, I got a feeling, Bill, that may be the difference this weekend. Maybe not Payne, but maybe a late inning situation where maybe it's subbing in Antigua late for a defensive play or subbing in a guy like Bargo, Villeneuve, like that.
And now they've got a wild card in Reese Chapman as well, who's just swinging the bat really well. So, you know, the options are there. You know, it's so many options for Tony.
Chapman was one I was going to bring up. Man, last night really flashing the defensive ability and the glove, and then also, you know, the big hit. That's a guy that if he just sticks around, you know, Tony referenced Trey Lipscomb's tenure and how that was kind of, you know, couldn't really get on the field, then was a part-time player, and then 2022 just combusted, you know, along with that team.
Right.
And next thing, now he's in pro ball, doing really good in the Nationals organization, already been called up.
Yeah, it's interesting. Chapman hit 2 home runs last night, but you know what he got on Sports Center for last night? The catch in right and the catch in the outfield that he made where he laid out. So, you know, it's it just shows you how much talent he has to be able to make a catch like that, go get a ball like that, and then have 2 home runs in the same game. Just a tremendously, tremendously talented young guy.
He got off to a slow start, and I think a lot of that was attributed to the fact that, you know, it's pretty clear he was going to be part-time role this year, but flexing him in and what he's been able to do in those situations, I think fans are starting to see the ability because it's there. I mean, he and Dylan Dreiling, for me, will always be attached because they came in the same class, and they were literally the bats of that class. There was another guy or two, but it was clear. Right. Those guys were the offense of that particular class. And there was a lot of emphasis on them. You felt like both of them were going to work out, but you were like, well, if one of them does, then maybe we're in good shape. But I think the way it's worked out, obviously, Dreiling, you knew coming in, would have a full-time role. We've talked about him and had him on the show. Really love him. But early on in the respective careers, it was pretty clear Chapman had the defensive edge. It's a matter of who could find their way onto the field first via bat or otherwise. I just really feel like Chapman, I mean, he's going to be, we spoke about it, the star outfielder, so to speak, going forward, at least next year. You know, if he sticks around, he's going to be the guy out there. And the guy's athletic enough to, he could play the hot corner on the infield as well if you need him to. I just really love what he brings to the table, and I'm anxious to see. I wonder if he may, you know, I mentioned a guy like Bargo, you know, or Villeneuve. Maybe it's Chapman that gets a pinch hit situation this weekend to come up big.
Yeah, obviously that's a great, you know, a great asset for Tony to have in the lineup. And now you talk about Dylan and Reese coming in at the same time. Interesting, you know, chances are pretty good that Dylan's going to be drafted high enough where he's going to sign it to this year. So, you know, what a luxury for Tony to have a Reese Chapman to be able to plug in and take that spot from day one of next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to have Chapman will have a ton of leverage in a lot of areas, but Tennessee will as well, because they will be able to push him into a full-time role. And like we said, he can kind of quarterback that outfield if he needs to. Speaking of the draft, like you mentioned Dreiling, starting to get a lot of draft buzz coming in from now until midsummer, until July. The Vols are going to have a handful of guys. I've told you this, Bill, like in that, I don't know who the highest one will be. That's, man, it's a hot topic between some of the guys I'm in a circle with. I don't know if it'll be Amick. Beam's got a chance. You know, I wouldn't put Blake Burke is interesting to me because there's not been a ton of buzz yet, chatter that I've heard yet, but I expect it. The way that the improvements that he's made, Chris Burke mentioned it last night on Twitter. I saw he made a reply.
Yeah, he actually, during the game Saturday, during the broadcast, he said he expects the Tennessee's top 5 hitters to go by the 3rd round of the draft.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. I mean, if you want to put a number on it, like that range of 30 to 70, I mean, you're talking Beam, Amick, Burke, Dreiling, Christian Moore. That's 5 guys right there that I guarantee you. I mean, you could theoretically
add tiers to that group.
And tiers is going to be in the mix. That's going to be a wild card. I mean, he's going to go. That's just my opinion with what he's done. That's going to be an interesting one. That's going to be volatile in terms of trying to predict just because of each and, you know, kind of you know, this first year being a full-time player and he's doing this. Like, it's so that's an interesting one. But if you compare it, I mean, he's not an infielder, but that's what got Trey Lipscomb third round, even though it was kind of like, hey, where did this come from? You know, all of a sudden, 1 year, first time, full-time role, Trey can play anywhere in the infield just about. So that's kind of what did it for him. I'm interested to see how it works with tiers, but at least five guys. You could theoretically have five guys go on day one,
right?
Which would be nuts. But interesting to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, and with tiers, you know, it's not like we didn't see this coming last year. You know, he didn't play a lot last year, but when he played, we saw the potential. And, you know, you can bet the scouts saw that potential as well. So, you know, he has all the measurables, and now he's producing this year and in this first full year. So I don't think anybody's really surprised that he's having the type of year that he is. At least I'm not, from what we saw last year. Of course, I saw him in the fall as well, so I knew what kind of athlete he was. So I'm not surprised, and I don't think most people who follow the program and follow college baseball closely are really surprised he's having this kind of success.
No, I'm not. And you know, if you want some draft material, over at Baseball Prospect Journal, we've come up with our latest mock, our first mock of the season. Got one Vol in there in the first round. We're talking top 30, just for transparency's sake. I grade out the top 39 as the first round. I count those competitive balance rounds. So, you know, if a Vol goes top 39, I'll grade it out as a first round grade. I know others do as well. But we've just got top 30 right now. That will change. It's been a very interesting way of going about trying to mock this particular draft. I will say that Drew Beam can still do a lot for himself. And I think Amick and Burke can in terms of trying to get in that first round or something like that. There's just not, when you look at a guy like, let's start with Beam. Once you get past Treya Savage from East Carolina, you got Jonathan Santucci as a college arm from Duke. Obviously, Hagan Smith and Chase Burns will be at near the top. Past Jess Savage and Santucci, there is not a lot of – I mean, there's numbers in college arms, which is good, but it's kind of shaping up now to be like, okay, who can rise from this? Who can be a college arm that a team will want to bite with in the first round? I think Beam can do a lot for himself, but he's kind of is what he is at this point, and it's a lot of pitchability. It's a really high floor. If somebody like, dare I say, the Braves want to go that route, I know a lot of Vols fans would like that. But and as far as Amick is concerned, I can't find a college hitter around his range, really, that – because I've got a couple of guys going ahead of him, like James Tibbs from Florida State. You know, once I got to Amick, there wasn't anybody close, that I think could threaten hopping over him when it comes to the power and the hit tool. So I thought those two dynamics were interesting looking at the first round, but we shall see. First up, the Vols got Kentucky this weekend, and a few notes on the Cats before we depart. The UK offense, Bill, they've got five guys with a 420 or higher on base percentage. Yeah, they got four guys hitting over 300. You probably know by now about the stolen bases. They're 79 of 99. And really, it's three guys in this lineup that do it for me. I mentioned Nick Lopez up at the top. He's hitting 403, 18 extra base hits. Emilian Petrie. Five home runs. He also has 19 bags. Ron Nicholson, he's the home run hitter. He's the only one in double digits. Everybody else is kind of, you know, I think Waldschmidt might be number two with six, but you've got a bunch of guys with just a couple or a few.
Right.
Nicholson, 11 homers, slugging .670. They've got three guys with 13 or more stolen bases and a bunch of guys with a handful.
And that plays right into that big ballpark.
Yep.
Playing that small ball, yep.
What does it for me at the plate when it comes to Kentucky? They've got four guys that are in the plus when it comes to walks over strikeouts, and that's qualified plate appearances.
Wow.
Vols just have one guy. You want to take a stab at who it is?
No idea.
Kavaris Tears. Cats have four guys like that with with qualified plate appearances. So that's they're a tough out. We'll see what the Vols can do. Anything else you're looking at this weekend, Bill, as we're looking at a top five matchup? Even if Tennessee sweeps, the Kentucky's still in the lead in the division. It's kind of crazy to think about, but I'm not sure.
14-1.
Yeah.
14-1, you know.
Yeah. So, what anything else you're looking at?
Yeah, just one thing I wanted to add. I always try to give props to local guys when they're playing on teams, and Tennessee's going to be playing Reuben Church from Maryville. He's had a good career at Kentucky. He's a very solid player, not a flashy star type by any means, but he's been a solid player for Kentucky, and he's playing that same role this year. And then, of course, Ryan Hagen now is there from Farragut, pitcher. Hadn't pitched much this year, but he's been a solid guy for Kentucky for a couple of years now. So, you know, it's always good, and from their perspective, you know, they always – get a little extra adrenaline going when they get to play against the hometown or home area team, when especially coming to Kentucky, their home area team coming to them. So it'll be exciting for those two guys to play against Tennessee.
Yeah. Love to see it. Love to see the local guys in the SEC. And you mentioned, Bill, that the fact that they get guys from everywhere. I mean, we went over it, all these transfers, whether it's a transfer or a recruit, kind of plucking them from everywhere, and the fact that they're able to they have such a tight-knit bunch and such a scrappy bunch, like year over year, and just a lot of success with that program. Dominique Nauman is an example. I mentioned him on the weekend rotation. Coming over from Central Connecticut State, he is the lefty. I think that matchup is going to be key. I would imagine it would be he and Beam on Saturday. That's kind of what I'm thinking. He's not been invincible on the year. He gave up 7 earned runs to Ole Miss. Outside of that, been fantastic. He's gone 5 1/3 or more in SEC play every time. That Ole Miss game was the only time he gave up more than 2 earned runs. So you expect a really tough outing from him. And I think that Saturday game in terms of pitching and just overall, I think Nauman versus Beam, if that's how it shakes out, I think that's going to be key.
Yeah, another thing, I expect to see quite a few Tennessee fans there for two reasons. First of all, Tennessee fans follow this Tennessee baseball team, but as I mentioned earlier, the Ponies are running at Keeneland this weekend. It is the April meet, so I expect a lot of UT fans to get up and do the UT Kentucky baseball Keeneland doubleheader at some point during the weekend.
Yeah, I can tell you that just within the past week and a half, the ticket market has skyrocketed. 2 weeks ago, a little over 2 weeks ago, you could have gotten your hands on some great value. Tickets were like $20 a piece for seats, like really good seats. Now you're looking at three times that much. And I hadn't even checked today. That was just yesterday or the day before.
Yeah. But you know, talking about tickets for last weekend for the LSU series, I can personally attest that I watched the transaction take place. 2 tickets for Sunday's game, $150 each, just to get in the stadium at Lindsey.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, Tennessee ticket. It's a hot ticket for sure right now.
Yeah, and going up to Kentucky, man, there's this feeling that it could get funky. The weather could get funky. I'm not sure. I haven't checked lately, but early on, the first couple of times I checked, it kind of changed a little bit, whether it was going to be a couple of days of rain, one day of rain, might be a little bit chilly a night or two. Don't quite know, but you got to be prepared for a little bit of everything. We saw how the last trip to Lexington worked out with that 22 team.
Right.
And so these boys got to go up there ready for business. I think they will. I really like this lineup and things, even though, you know, like we talked about, it wasn't the offensive output necessarily we expected last weekend. they still found ways to win, and they were able to show whether, you know, changing up the repertoire, you know, with sacrifice situations and things like that. And in one game, Cal Stark had the first hit, and it felt like it was going to be forever till the Vols got their first hit. And Cal Stark starting things off, getting a hit, and he was just losing his mind. You know, we talked about his body language and how infectious he is to not only the pitchers, but the clubhouse. Just guys like that, and the overall vibe, you know, from like pitch to pitch and just the mentality. I really like this group going up to Lexington.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it's going to be a good weekend.
We'll see how it plays out. You know, I mentioned the weekend rotation, so I got to mention a crumble cookie, and this week's lineup features Robin Villeneuve. I'm just kidding. I don't know. He doesn't have an NIL deal with Crumble yet, but my goodness, buddy, you got a chance this week with the maple cream sandwich. It's got the Canadian maple leaf printed right on the cookie. It's a double decker. It's got cream in the middle. Packs a lot of power. Bill, I might just go ahead and predict a Robin Villeneuve home run this weekend.
Well, the Stanley Cup playoffs do start at the end of this week. So it's the maple leaf, if you will, Canadian cookie. That's apropos.
It's a sign. It is a sign. Hopefully a good sign. I'm going with that. Maybe we mentioned a few names, a guy deep in the lineup, or, you know, perhaps not at the top, not the part of the machine that, you know, operating this high-powered bus headed to Omaha on the 920-mile journey. I'm going with Robin Villeneuve. Maybe he has a key moment. I'm calling my shot, a Robbie home run. Maybe that's a difference this weekend. We shall see. Bill, any parting thoughts or shots before we depart?
Just looking forward to the weekend. It's going to be an exciting series. Some really good series in the SEC this week. Besides Tennessee and Kentucky, a couple of others that are going to go a long way in deciding who finishes high in their respective divisions as well.
Yeah, same with me. And all of a sudden, that Western Division looking pretty interesting after, you know, Arkansas dropping that series. A&M within one game. On this side, the Eastern side, the Vols can close in. I really think their mentality is just to chip away and not so much, hey, a sweep and we're a game away. I don't think that's their mentality at all. But for UK, the next few weekends, obviously Tennessee this weekend, South Carolina follows, followed by Arkansas, and then they end with Florida and Vandy. So I do not expect another 14-1 going down the last 15. But the next three weekends in particular are going to be telling for this Kentucky Wildcat team that I'm excited to watch. I'm going to try to make it up there for at least one game. I've got a lot of logistics going against me, but I'm still going to try to get up there to Kentucky Proud Park. Bill, it's been fun. I appreciate you hopping on and chopping it up here as we talked about the Wildcats and the Vols.
One last comment.
Yeah.
This week, in most of the polls, the top four teams were SEC teams, and people wonder why the best players in the country want to come to the SEC.
Yeah, it's a different league, man. I love to watch it. This year is forming into something I really love. I mean, there's so much parity. I think also the Vols are kind of built for that parity and for a long stretch and a grind. We've seen so many teams just falter when you think they're getting hot or they might be figuring something out. No one is safe. These boys are riding the bus to Omaha, man, and the vibes are good. Hopefully they will keep it going this weekend as they travel up to Kentucky Proud Park. Folks, we will catch you on the other side of the Kentucky series. We'll see you next time.